Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Home Improvement Show, built by Par Lumber. When it comes to big or small projects around the home, Tony and Corey have got the know-how and the answers to make your life just a bit easier. Here they are, your Weekend Warriors, Tony and Corey.
Hey, welcome to the Weekend Warriors Home Improvement Show, built by Par Lumber. I'm Corey Valdez.
And I'm Tony Cookston.
Thanks for tuning in with us this amazing weekend. We've got another great show lined up for you. We have another special guest in the studio with us. It's been a long time. The Weekend Warriors would like to invite, announce Matt White with the Killers in the studio with us. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well. Tony's microphone is going crazy over here.
Yeah, I think it's that lower connection down there. It's okay.
So anyway, how you been?
Doing good. Bugs are very prolific out there, so we're always staying really busy.
The bug business is good. Have you ever seen the movie, what is it called, They or Them with Rowdy Roddy Piper?
I haven't.
He plays a guy who finds a pair of glasses, and when he puts the glasses on, he sees the world for what it really is, a bunch of aliens and whatnot. Anyway.
Nope, I haven't seen that one. Usually the
doesn't matter.
Usually the go-to movie is Arachnophobia, everybody talks about.
Oh, sure.
It's a good movie. You should check it out. It's a good movie. Anyway, business is good, killing bugs, and what we want to talk about today is all the things that homeowners need to know. Okay. Either A, things that they can do to prevent some of these critters from getting in their house, or B, what you guys do, and can they just hire you to come out and do it for them?
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure you would, because you do it for me.
We do.
The killers show up at my house every quarter, and they do their thing. They spray outside. They check for rodents, and they set traps and bait boxes. It's amazing. I don't have any problems with rodents in my house.
That's what we like to hear.
We like to keep it that way anyway. Tony, what are some things that we want to talk to Matt about?
I think we're pretty much just going to talk about one thing, and that is pests.
Pests.
Not the kind of pests that annoy you by calling you names or ignoring your direct instruction. We
kids.
Call those kids, right. These are actually the kind of pests that you don't have to raise, fortunately. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that. This is springtime. Spring is in the air, and this is probably, I think that extermination probably gets, it's seasonal, kind of like different kinds of things that you're focusing on at different times of the year.
Very much so.
So when the bat phone rings over at the Killers, what is on the lips of everyone who wants you out to their house immediately?
Yeah, this time of year, definitely it's going to be small ants. It just seems like after the sunshine comes out, they come out of the woodwork and they're everywhere on your counters, floors, ceilings, around the outside on warm days. But yeah, they just I would say that's probably the biggest one right now. And they will go and be problematic all the way up until October, November, depending on what the weather does.
Man, oh man. So what do you guys do? I guess let's talk about a couple things. So A, what can someone do to try and reduce or prevent ants? Is it possible to just get rid of them?
Yeah, I mean, you can't totally eliminate them forever. I mean, there's always, you know, circumstances where, you know, depending on the area or, you know, ground or residential area around you, if there's, you know, millions and millions or billions of ants, we can definitely protect your home from them coming into your house, but you're not going to be able to 100% eliminate them forever.
Right.
But also you get other things that are conducive, like, you know, trees growing or branches touch the house, or you might not see it or notice it up by the gutters, things like that. And it allows ants to track over to the structure without getting in the products that we're putting down around the foundation.
Gotcha. So for someone to reduce the issue, if they just wanted to reduce ants coming into their house, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that people should think about or good practice, I guess.
Yeah, good practice, best practice is definitely what I mentioned. The trees touching the house, making sure that stuff's trimmed back. Bushes at the foundation level, making sure they're back from the structure. One big thing is we see a lot of times where bark dust, people will add bark dust every year, and then pretty soon that bark dust is actually all the way up to the base of the siding. and that allows ants to go to and from the structure without actually touching products or being on that surface level where we're actually applicating.
Ah, that's a good point. So any trees hanging over the top of your house, touching mm-hmm. in your roof, or, you know, we talk about that all the time because keeping your trees trimmed and your shrubbery trimmed mm-hmm. is good for a lot of reasons. But ants is definitely a good one.
Absolutely.
And they travel like in a super highway. You find an ant or some ants, 3 or 4 or 5 ants, you can follow where they're at mm-hmm. and just keep following the trail all the way to, I don't even know, Timbuktu. You'll never figure out where they're coming from.
Well, especially with small ants, they can have multiple colonies and multiple queens and stuff. So you just have these massive colonies, hundreds of thousands of ants in some cases. And so, yeah, you can have those huge trails. We get them a lot around hot tubs. We see people with ants in the hot tub because the hot tubs warm year-round, and you can definitely have activity year-round if they're in those areas.
That's good to know.
Those are the places that you don't want them to be. Why can't ant infestations just be in the garage? You know, where you don't ever spend any time. Why does it have to be on your dinner plate or in your cup or in the hot tub? I feel like they are just the most pesky, those things. Ants, it's a funny thing, I think, about ants, because there's so many different kinds of ants. Big ants, right? Oh, yeah. Big scary ants, mm-hmm. you know, the kind you're thinking, that thing's going to bite me and leave a mark.
Yeah.
And then these tiny little ants that are, I mean, seemingly not, I mean, if they get in your food and you eat it, you would never know it. You just would. They're so small, right? They might taste a little like...
Yeah, it tastes funny, that's for sure.
Tastes a little funny. But they don't really pose a serious threat.
Ants really don't. I mean, they're not going to hurt you. They're just more of annoying than anything. I mean, getting in your food, obviously we don't want stuff in your food. That by far, I would say, is probably the worst problem when it comes to small ants, is just that contamination of getting in there because they're in those products. Where we get that call all the time where, you know, I poured some cereal out in the bowl and there's ants all over in it. And we get that one a lot.
Ooh. So going back to that, I mean, food. What should people be doing when they're taking care of their dishes or food or storage? I mean, should they be, you know, cleaning that up regularly? I mean, if you have a problem with ants, I feel like they're in there for a reason.
Are you saying you're expecting people to do their dishes? Is that what you're saying?
Well, in my house, yes, 100%. We expect you to do your dishes.
But yeah, with the... As far as like trying to secure your foodstuffs, I mean, there's certain things you want to, you know, your flours and dry goods, things like that. You can, you know, seal that stuff in containers because that'll help with other bugs, even besides ants. But ants are so small, it's almost virtually impossible to keep them out of everything.
Gotcha.
But just cleaning is the biggest thing, keeping the, you know, food picked up off the floor, things like that. And it's hard sometimes with kids, you know, they drop crumbs and stuff and it happens. Or even with pets, you know, you get dog food and cat food that are at the floor level where ants are at, you know, predominantly, the, you know, when they first come into a home. And it's easy for them to find that stuff.
Okay, so if a homeowner decides that they have an ant problem,
mm-hmm.
I feel like 9 times out of 10, the first thing they do is they go to the grocery store, they buy some ant bait, or we'll call it taro, because I know it's a very common name. Go to the store, they buy some taro, and they bring it back, and they squirt it out onto a little, you know, piece of cardboard or something at the place where they saw them. And then they come back in a week, and that little thing of that little driplet is gone. And they're like, all right, we did it. Look at that. We saved money because we handled it. And then 3 weeks later, more ants, more taro. 3 weeks later, more ants, more taro.
Yeah.
And they do that for years and years. And mm-hmm. they say, oh, I'll tell you how to take care of your ants. You buy taro once every couple of months and you just keep putting it out and keep putting it out. And that's how we take care of it. I remember you telling me a story that's how you hear people tell you, oh, I just handle it myself. But at what point does the homeowner say, I am tired of dealing with these things, and just call a professional to come out and handle it?
It's usually when, you know, you get from that where you're seeing a few ants here and there to where all of a sudden you wake up in the morning and there's, you know, 1,000 ants on your counter. And taro is a boric acid based product. It, you know, there's a lot of boric acid based baits out there on the market, and they'll work for very minimal problems, but they're not going to eliminate, you know, an ant colony that has thousands and thousands of ants. It takes too long. And that's the benefit of the products that we use now. It is a product that they will track through. It's a non-repellent, so they don't detect it. They'll track through it, track it back into the nest, and then when they groom and food share, it affects one another, and that's how it affects the whole colony versus trying to use a bait that they actually have to physically carry back into the colony and food share.
Oh, right. Sure, oh. Sure. So if they're running around and they're not hungry, you're not going to kill them with tarro.
And also depending on the time of year, because they're focusing on different types of foods, different times of the year, whether it's a sugar-based product that they're looking for or if it's a protein base when they're coming out of the wintertime. So it just depends on the time of year also with what's going to work better than not work.
Ants are so complex.
They are complex, and they get inside the house, and they crawl around inside the walls and in the cabinets, and they hide and hide and hide and hide
yeah.
until they find that thing they want, and then they come out. And you think, I'm going to treat it right here. But the fact is, they're all over the place. They're everywhere. And you have to treat it. So when you put out your product, whatever mm-hmm. that stuff is, and it's undetectable, so they don't have to think it's food. They just walk through it, and they take it back.
Correct.
And you do it like a full perimeter, everything all the way around the house and even around the baseboards and just everywhere, all over. So that anywhere they go, they find it.
Correct. Yeah, we're going to treat around the foundation. We're going to check and treat the crawl space areas that need it. In the inside, it's not spraying the whole baseboard area. It's mainly where the wall and the floor, that seam come together, right along that little groove there. And then most importantly is, and you know, if you're getting ants inside, they're generally nesting in the wall somewhere. So we'll even do some wall injections sometimes just to get at where the colonies are at that much quicker rather than solely waiting on them to track through that product and track it back into the nest. We can get that product into the walls, and we have different specialty pieces of equipment where we can, you know, put a real fine mist into the wall, and so it'll basically fog inside that wall cavity to eliminate the colony.
Okay, so somebody calls the killers. Killers come out, and they treat for ants because there's been a problem. And the exterminator comes out, sees very clearly, yep, we've got a problem here. We got to take care of it. We're going to do our thing. How long is the homeowner expected to wait mm-hmm. before they call you the next morning and they're like, yep. Hey, we still have ants. They're not all gone overnight. What would you say is the standard amount of time that they allow the poison to do the work and get them taken care of?
You definitely want to give it a week or two because especially when we do that initial service, if we're getting into all the right areas, it can stir the ant colony up quite a bit. And so you may over that first couple of days see more activity before you see less. And in a lot of cases, you might not see any. But it you want to give it that week or two for the products to work. But if you're still seeing anything after that, then we definitely want you to call so we can come out and check everything again.
Do you feel like that when you go out to just any job site, whatever it is, that it's generally pretty straightforward and not oftentimes, wow, I've never seen this before. How often do you end up at a place where you're like, call reinforcements, this is going to take everybody?
There are those. I mean, after doing this for, 28 years now, it's there are still times where you run into stuff where it's like, wow, I've just never seen this many in this house, or whether it's ants or roaches or bed bugs. But it happens every year. There's a house that comes along or two that are just blows you away with how much activity they're having.
And how people let it get that far.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, how could you not know you have 15 billion ants in your crawl space? How would you not know this?
Well, it goes back to what you were saying about a person putting out taro every year. And we've had that story where taro works great. I've been using it for 20 years. It's like, well, that just tells us you've had ants in your house for 20 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's almost like putting food out for stray cats. You got a stray cat problem in your neighborhood and you figure that they don't have a home and you don't want them to starve to death. So you put food out and you yep. can't figure out why the cat problem's not going away. You keep feeding these ants, you know, and they know that there's, whether they're taking it back and it's killing some of the ants or whatever, but they still know that there's food there. So they're still going to keep coming back.
Absolutely.
So what? So ants, we've talked a lot about ants.
Yep.
What are some other insects that are problematic in our area, in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, definitely. I would say the next most common pest, it's probably a toss-up between spiders and the box elders and stink bugs.
Oh.
It's more so, not that they hurt anything. I mean, they're just more annoying, or people are phobic when it comes to bugs in their house, you know, especially spiders. People get really freaked out about spiders. But annoying would be box elders and stink bugs.
Yeah, the stink bug thing, man, oh man. What can you do to get rid of those?
it's one of those where it's hitting a lot of the cracks and crevices around the outside of the house, around the gutters, the eaves. Depending on your siding, there can be a lot of gaps, especially vinyl siding is one that's very susceptible to a lot of bugs getting in and around and behind it. And so those hitting all those little cracks and crevices is a big thing for the stink bugs. Usually the first thing when people first have their experience with stink bugs is they go up and smash it. And then that's where they figure out where the name comes from.
Yeah. Where
because
did that name
they
from?
Smell horrible.
They do smell horrible. And box elder bugs, I think, get mistaken a lot for stink bugs.
They do.
I see that all the time. My kids, they say, oh, they're stink bugs, but they're box elder bugs.
No.
And it's so funny because there's specific trees on my property where you go up to the tree during the summer months and they are just covered in these box elder bugs. Is that pretty common? Do they love one or two types of tree?
Well, they're usually going after, it's called honeydew, but it's like basically aphids and other bugs on those trees. So we see them a lot on maple trees, anything that's going to be associated with those aphids and other bugs, because that's what they're going after for food sources. And so that's why you'll see, you know, thousands of them on some trees out there. But then when the sun comes out, they like to sun themselves on your house. So you get them on that south or west side of the house a lot in the afternoons.
Yes,
they are definitely sunbathers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's terrible because, yeah, they will blanket the entire side of the house.
They will.
And you can't do anything. You can't open the door one time and like 50 of them go in the house.
Are they harmful to the trees or to the house? I mean, do they eat wood fiber or anything like that? Should people be worried about their structure with those bugs?
No, they're just more annoying. They're not going to cause any structural issues. They're just, again, one of those bugs that they're just
everywhere.
Because there's
just annoying.
So many of them. And I've had homes where you walk around the outside and they are all over you. And so it's just one of those things where it's just the annoyance of it more than
stink
anything.
Stink bugs are kind of the same way. They're pretty docile. They don't do anything. To me, they just sit there. But when they take off, they get that really loud flight. You know what I mean?
You can definitely
wings.
Hear them. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's
definitely.
Like a clacking loud wing pattern. And yeah, like you said, they stink so bad. I have a story. I'll tell you real quick, and I know that they taste as bad as they smell.
No.
I accidentally had one land in my water, and I didn't realize it. I took a big gulp of the water, and it was like, whoa, spit it all out. And yeah, they taste gross, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, the getting it into tight little spaces is their thing. They love to be warm, and so they're in the... They're in your window frames, you know, if you have open your window for the first time and you just find them lined up in there in the edge of your window frame
Absolutely.
And behind your siding.
Yeah,
and
they get in those cracks and crevices.
All cracks and crevices.
Camp out.
Oh, yeah. Finding some warmth. And it's just, they're absolutely terrible. I remember you told us a story on the radio years back about how difficult they can be to kill because they're... Just super resilient.
They're like a little armor. They're a little, you know, the surface of them. And so, yeah, they're a little more difficult to kill, but they've come out some great products the last few years, and that does a much better job at knocking down the numbers. And again, it's one of those bugs where you're not going to be able to treat and never see another one again, but we can definitely get it to where you're not getting thousands of them on the outside of the house.
Yeah, like in the gutters. I'll see them a lot up by the gutter line, just hanging out up there by the thousands.
Yeah.
So if I get that problem, I'm going to call you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that the real reason why there are so few people doing the job that you do is because of those calls when somebody says, I've got a swarm of bees in my backyard and I don't know how to deal with it. That's the one that's no fun to deal with. I mean, I've had face-to-face experience with bees that really want
hornet.
Yeah,
hornet. You got to be careful.
There's a big difference.
You got to be careful how you say bees. We actually have had listeners, and rightfully so, we were knocking on bees. And I think the problem is they get classified all together. Hornets
Correct.
And wasps and all of those, you know, the bad ones, we just call them bees.
Right.
So we were talking on the show about how bad bees are and how to get rid of them and how to kill them. And when the fact of the matter is bees are good for the
Correct.
Environment, you don't want to harm bees, and hornets and wasps are but what we really want to call you about.
Correct.
What is the difference?
Well, the big difference is, you know, your honeybees are going to actually produce their pollinators. I mean, all the bees are pollinators, but the honeybees are producing honey, and they're what we need for crops and a lot of different things in our life. Whereas when we're dealing with hornets and yellow jackets, it comes down to more of a safety issue. Because when we're going out to treat for hornets and yellow jackets, wasps, it's because they're in areas. A lot of times people have kids or pets.
Right.
And so, it comes back to a safety issue. Whereas with the honeybees, if they're just, you know, flying around as a swarm in the backyard, that's one of those things where we can refer out beekeepers to come out and collect those if they're available to come out and get those. But that's not something that we generally would treat for because bees just in a swarm where they're following a queen, if you just let them do their thing, they're going to usually move on to another area as long as they're not getting into your structure. But if they're just hanging on a tree, that's not anything that you want to treat for because they're usually going to just move on. You just stay out of that area for a while.
Yeah. And bees seem to be like, if you don't bother them, they don't bother you.
Absolutely.
You know, wasps and hornets and yellow jackets, that's a different story.
They can be definitely more aggressive, especially the hornets. The bald-faced hornet's probably one of the more aggressive ones that we deal with.
Tony knows bald-faced hornets well.
Yeah. I'm not reliving that story. I have nightmares every time I talk about it.
But, I keep seeing these videos online and on America's Funniest Videos and stuff like that where people walk outside with these cans, double-fisting cans to go after the hornets or whatever,
yeah,
the nest.
Yes.
And you just see them start swatting in the air and running for their life.
Yep.
It's all too common, and I don't want to be that person. I mean, I try to inspect around my house pretty regularly. I'll walk up and look in all my eaves.
Yeah.
And if you get them when they're small, when you get those little nests that are just starting to form and they're only about an inch or two.
Yeah, a little paper nest.
Little paper nest. I'll tackle those. I'll get rid of those,
but,
I think.
But when it's the size of a basketball, you've decided it's gone too far.
Oh, yeah.
Time to call Matt White with the Killers. Jump on your computer and go to killers.net and just say, I need some help. Come out here and help me.
Thekillers.net.
Yeah, that's how I do it now. I mean, they show up every quarter. It's awesome.
Yeah, I think that trying to deal with pests in a way apart from just calling a professional to come out and take care of it,
mm-hmm.
for me is just a waste of time and effort and money and you know, leave it to the pros. How many times have you heard somebody say that? Just leave it to the pros. And that is the way to do it. I need to probably have you come out and inspect my place. Years ago when we talked to you, you would come out and do a free estimate. What does it cost to get somebody to have you come out and just check out their situation, see what's going on?
Yeah, still the same. Yeah, if you have any issues or concerned about stuff, you just have to call us and we send the inspectors out to take a look at it and they can go over if you need a service or what services are available for whatever issues you're having.
I can't imagine why anybody would not take advantage of such a fine offer. That's absolutely the way to go.
That's how I met Matt. He personally showed up at my house.
Yeah.
I
remember
I had
I remember that story.
Silverfish? I thought I had silverfish.
Christmas story. We have to take a quick break, but we're going to be right back with Matt White and the Killers. You're listening to Tony Corr, your Weekend Warriors. Don't go away.
Listening to the Weekend Warriors Home Improvement Show, built by Par Lumber. Now, here's Tony and Corey.
Hey, welcome back to the Weekend Warriors Home Improvement Show. Thanks for staying with us. Today we've got Matt White from the Killers Pest Control in the studio with us. He's our local pest killer.
Resident bug guy.
You come in here and tell us all the stuff that's going on. If you haven't already, go check out our Facebook and Instagram and YouTube channels. You can go find us at www.homeshow.com. And we'd love it if you subscribe to all our stuff. We're videoing this right now. We're actually putting that on our YouTube channel for our video podcast if you want to see what we all look like. So Matt, before the break, we were talking about ants and bugs and all that stuff, but the real problem right now seems to be rats and just rodents in general.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, the last couple of years we saw a pretty significant increase in especially the rat population. You know, with COVID, a lot of restaurants were closed, and the rats were usually used to going to the dumpsters and getting food in those areas. And so when you had a lot of restaurants and stuff closed, a lot of those rodents ventured out into the residential areas. So we definitely saw in residential areas around some of those commercial areas, a lot of increases in rodent populations.
That actually makes a lot of sense. So the rats were just venturing out because they couldn't get their dumpster food.
Absolutely.
Gross.
Dumpster food.
Well, I remember years ago it was chicken coops. That was the thing.
Oh, yeah.
The urban chicken farmer
yep.
became such a huge thing, and people were putting chicken coops in their yard and building them and all of that stuff, which is amazing for rats, right?
It is, yeah, and they're still, the urban chicken coop is still alive and well, and that's definitely added to an increase in the rodents the last couple of years. I mean, last year we did twice as much rodent service as we did the year before. So it's not even just like a little bit of an increase, it's a lot of an increase in the amount of activity and the amount of equipment we're having to put out and usages and stuff. And a lot of it goes back to those chicken coops. People still feeding a lot of birds and squirrels and you know, which is fine. You can feed birds and squirrels, just don't let an inch of feed build up on the ground for the rats to get into.
Gotcha. Yeah, we had bird feeders out in our yard, mm-hmm. and we actually developed a rat problem under our shed. Not so much in our house, but under our shed. And you guys put some bait boxes around it, which is what we needed. But even your technician told me, he's like, well, if you really want to get rid of them, you got to get rid of this bird feed. Because it was right there, and that's what they were chowing on.
It's definitely one of those things that's a contributing factor. But you have a lot of people that really enjoy their birds and their squirrels, and so it's one of those things where you just gotta limit the amount of food. If you don't feed them, that's great. I mean, that's a perfect world for us, but we know people still do.
Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, people. I mean, we like looking at the bird feeders and the feeding the birds. It's I love it. But
stick with hummingbirds.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
It's not a bad idea.
No solid food. They can be hard to get them to come around sometimes.
They can.
Yeah, and they're just not everywhere. I've had hung a hummingbird feeder or a couple of hummingbird mm-hmm. feeders outside my house and it never. But then sometime I saw one out there and I thought, oh, it's time to put, you know, some sugar water in the hummingbird feeder and either they're there or they're not, but they're not just always around.
Absolutely.
I know there's some tricks to it. I remember reading how you have to put the hummingbird feeder near a shady bush so that they can go rest and sit down in the shady bush because they're not just going to be hanging out in like the bright, sunny areas. They come in and feed, and then they go back to the bush. They come back and feed.
Interesting. So. Oh, yeah. I wish it was that difficult for me to get moles and gophers come to my house.
You guys don't do that, right?
We don't. Yeah, we're. It's one of those things that it's a very specific thing to trap and treat for those guys, and so we let the guys do it that do it all the time.
What about larger rodents like raccoons and possums and
again, just different licensing. So that's a wildlife, and so you have to live trap a lot of that stuff, and so we leave that to the guys that do the wildlife trapping and stick to the smaller gotcha. Critters like mice and rats.
So if you have squirrels or, you know, bigger things like raccoons living under your house, let's mm-hmm. say, you're not the company. We need to call somebody else that does trapping.
Somebody that does wildlife trapping.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. That's good to know.
Yeah.
I haven't had that yet. But I actually work with a guy who's had some serious squirrel problems under his house. They were digging, the squirrels literally were digging under the foundation.
Oh, yeah, they'll definitely do that.
He made everything else, you know, squirrel proof. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, screw you. And then just dug under the foundation.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Rats will do that too.
Oh, they will.
They will.
My yeah. wife said that, and I thought she was crazy.
No, it's definitely, we've seen that a lot. If the population of rats gets bad enough, usually they're going to go through your foundation vents, the easy access points.
Right.
But if we seal those up and it's a severe problem, or if there's chicken coops nearby, we definitely see a lot where they'll tunnel right under the foundation footing.
So you mentioned foundation vents. How does somebody prevent rats from just making that easy access?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I see it all the time where the cable person will come out and they'll just puncture holes right in there and run their little cable and they don't care, you know?
Yeah, we definitely, it's getting better because there's so much wireless stuff now for when it comes to TV and audio video stuff. And so we don't see that as often, but I mean, there's still some companies running cable and stuff. And so that is, in the past, that was always one of the big things. They would just punch a hole and leave it bigger or just knock the whole screen out. And that definitely allows rodents to get in there. And so you just have to, as a homeowner, watch, making sure those foundation vent screens are secure. Or have us come out and check them. We're happy to do that. That's another service that we provide is fixing those foundation vent screens if they're broke out for, you know, whether it's from a person doing it or critters doing it. They can definitely be fixed.
And it's not as easy as just filling it with great stuff, foam,
yeah.
right? I mean, I've seen that. I mean, that doesn't stop them at all, does it?
It does not. No, they're foam is a good thing to show where there's activity because rodents will chew right through it. So it definitely will show you where the activity is, but it's not going to seal up your house.
Gotcha. It's good to know. You hear that, people? Don't be spraying great stuff foam, filling up all your vents.
Yeah, that's smart. So the primary way that you eradicate a mouse or rat problem is through setting traps.
Well, it starts with the foundation vent. Exclusion is first and foremost. We start with exclusion, so sealing up the house so that they can't get back in. And at that point, then, yeah, trapping on the inside and then installing bait stations around the outside for either monitoring. You know, we have products that we can use to just monitor for any activity, but we also have the baits that we can use that will actually kill rodents as well.
That's good to know. How would somebody know? You know, obviously, you if you see rats in your home, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I have had rats in my house.
In the house?
Not in the house, but in my crawl space.
Yeah.
And well, you guys came out.
That's in the house.
To me, it's close enough.
I mean, if I'm sitting on my couch watching TV and a rat runs across my foot, I'm going to freak out.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to lose it.
Well, are there clear telltale signs for someone to know that if they have mice or rats or something living in their house?
Usually the two biggest things I would say, obviously, is if you see droppings is going to be one of the big things that lets you know if there's rodent activity. But like you mentioned, sitting in your chair watching TV at night, that's rodents are active at night. And so a lot of times we'll get people calling because they heard scratching sounds where the rodents are chewing. And that's usually one of the telltale signs.
Gotcha. They're making their nests and trying to dig up through the floorboards.
Chew through the sheetrock.
Get in your kitchen.
So if you've got mice or rats or whatever, if you got them in the walls, right, and they're scratching from inside the walls, are they always on the move? I mean, they don't just hang out right in that one little section of wall, right? They're moving around all the time. They're going to find their time down in the crawl space and up in the walls and all over the place.
Correct. Yeah, they're just scavenging around looking for food sources. If you have insulation in the walls, they can scurry up through that insulation back and forth, you know, depending on how the home is put together. There's usually always little gaps or spaces, or if there's holes drilled for electrical stuff, they'll get through those holes from smaller rodents and stuff, or crawl space. There's always access points around plumbing and things like that.
This is what you need to do, and I want royalties for coming up with this idea. You need to develop like a predator. You need to develop a predator that silently moves around in and through the house and under the house and just eats mice.
There is. It's called a cat.
Oh, a cat.
Invent a predator? I mean, what? Is he a mad scientist?
I was imagining something robotic, actually. You know, like a Roomba? Like a Transformer or something. You know, that climbed in there and did all the things.
A rat Roomba just runs around.
Oh, yeah. Scooping him up.
Here's a question. So you said an electrical wire. You know, usually when I see an electrical wire in a wall, it's tiny. I mean, hole is like maybe a half inch in diameter. How is a mouse getting through a wire hole?
It just depends on who's drilling those holes. I mean, a mouse, if they can get their head through that little gap or that hole, they can get their body through. It'll just, the way their body and the bones are designed, they can compress themselves down and go into those really small holes. That's why you can see there's videos and stuff. You see rats where this the gap underneath the door where a rat will come up to that door. And you're like, oh, there's no way he's going to get under there. And he'll just scrunch right down and roll right underneath it.
So a rat, how big is a rat skull?
I mean, obviously they vary depending on how old they are. But usually you can figure about the size of a quarter or 50 cent piece. A rat can easily get through that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I've seen rats in my backyard before. And I'm not kidding you, the length of that thing with the tail, it was probably 18, 20 inches long with the tail.
Oh my goodness, that's huge.
That was a massive rat.
That's like a nutria.
Yeah, most of the ones we're dealing with are the smaller, the juveniles. But we definitely run into some of those, the big granddaddy rats in some of the older buildings.
Yeah, crazy. Give us a story. What is the worst rat problem you've seen lately?
Well, there's so many, but the one that kind of sticks in my mind, there was a house we looked at in downtown Portland, and I was actually out there during the day, and it was a house that they were going to be tearing down to put in some bigger buildings and stuff, but the rodent droppings in the basement were about 2 to 3 inches deep, and so there was just rats and during the daytime running everywhere.
Oh, man.
And so, and we happened to be downtown that night for dinner. And so I took the family over to look, and there was just rats running everywhere around the perimeter of this structure downtown.
Unbelievable.
And I'm sure it hasn't gotten any better since then.
Oh, yeah, my probably goodness. Not. I can't even imagine. So if you do a house, let's say we're talking about a one story and it's a 1500 square foot house, right? How many traps, or do you call it traps or baits or whatever those? Well,
the bait stations go around the outside, and then the actual snap style traps that we do, they go in the crawl space.
And so those, how many traps would you put out to, you know, to secure one full house?
It really depends on what we find when we do that initial inspection. If, you know, depending on the amount of droppings we're seeing in the crawl space will kind of dictate the amount of traps we put in. There's no set amount. It just depends on what we find once we get out there. Same thing for around the outside of a house for the bait stations. You know, if there's chicken coops on property or at a neighbor's adjacent property, we're going to put out more, whether it's around the foundation or the perimeter fencing, to help protect it as much as we need to against whatever the amount of activity is.
What if someone has small animals like cats or small dogs? Yeah. Is that something that they should worry about with those bait stations?
Well, the bait stations that we're using are it's kind of a hard plastic locking box. And so you'd really have to pry them open to get them open. And they're also built with a paver block inside. So they weigh about 10 pounds or so. So most dogs are not going to mess with them. And we always try to put them in out of the way areas too, to if there is pets on site that are bigger dogs.
But they can't get in there. So they can't get in and get the food.
Correct.
At
correct,
all.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to have a little key to open them up.
It's like a little black box, like 12 inches by 12 inches, correct, maybe correct. 4 inches tall. I feel like I see those all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
In my backyard.
Commercial buildings and, you know, all over the place.
I've got a few. You've seen them in my house.
And so they go through there and they eat whatever's inside there.
Correct.
And then they're done for after that.
Correct. Yeah, we can put baits for rodents. So we can also put some snap style traps in those stations as well.
What about having something die inside your house?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure you get this question all the time. You know, they get in there,
they eat the bait. They go back to bed,
and then they die inside the walls of your house. Is that pretty normal?
It's not normal. I mean, that's why we start with exclusion to try to limit that possibility. There's, you know, rodents are, again, they're smart. They'll find a little gap or an access point if that, you know, maybe we don't see or something, or it's a hidden one. And so if we're doing what we can correctly, the exclusion is going to stop them from, you know, being able to get easy access in and out. So that's why we bait outside, trap inside. So hopefully we don't have them die someplace that we can't get to them if they've eaten the bait.
Gotcha.
How often do you come across a situation where a rat has got caught in a trap and died and then been eaten or maybe half eaten by something else that's down there?
Well, we definitely see that. It's not even that it's eaten by something else. It's eaten by other rats. So it's we definitely see that.
Oh, that's gross.
Okay.
Like, they'll eat anything.
That's terrible. That's definitely terrible. Okay, so how long do you wait after setting traps and bait stations? How long do you wait before you come back and check? Or do you need the homeowner to call and have you come back?
Yeah, usually with traps, if we're setting traps in the crawl space because we know there's been activity down there, we're going to usually give it, you know, 3, 4, 5 days, maybe a week. Again, depending on what's the amount of activity that we start with that we judge is in that crawl space, because you want to give them a little bit of time to become used to the equipment. They may be a little adverse to traps or something new in their environment initially. So you want to give them a little bit of time to get used to that. But then, again, depending on the amount of activity you're starting with, it could be, you know, 3 or 4 checks over that first 60 days, depending on the activity.
And does the trap, like a traditional mouse trap, does the trap have bait on it too, or is it just the trap?
It's just the trap and attractants, and we have a lot of different attractants that we use.
Oh, okay, you spray it with something that makes it.
There's some different gels and stuff that we use that has an attractant in it to draw rodents in, or, you know, the guys will find, you know, or if they're in there feeding on something at the house, you know, we've had, you know, the guys using, you know, Slim Jims and, you know, cereal. If a rat's going after something in the structure, we'll sometimes utilize whatever that is in the traps because that's a food source they're comfortable with.
Right. I mean, why would they eat some gel sitting on a plastic trap if there's a Slim Jim right in the kitchen?
Yeah, exactly. That's just right there. I can see the Slim Jim. I know it's there.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the newest ones we've come up with is mayonnaise. Mayonnaise is one that they go after a lot because of the proteins in the mayonnaise.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Ugh. Yeah, I see little tiny, tiny mice, the tiniest little mice, periodically at work, you know, not when I say periodically, like once, you know, every 6 months or something, early in the morning or late in the afternoon, you see one in the scurry through the shadows or something like that. But never anything of any kind of size. Certainly not a rat. I can't even tell you that I've seen a rat with my eyes. You know,
well, the only reason I saw the one in my backyard was it because it got in one of the bait boxes, and it was still alive.
Yeah,
kind of
a little tipsy.
Was he dragging his back leg?
He was hanging out. He looked like it looked drunk.
Yeah, yeah. We get those calls a lot where people say, "Well, there's a rat not moving too much in our backyard. Can you guys come out and grab it?" And so we'll come out and pick those up. Yep.
So you go out to a job and you find full traps and drunk rats and stuff, and you collect them. Mm-hmm. What do you do with those things? You have a pet cemetery back at the lab where you know
those can be discarded in the garbage.
Oh
yeah,
anything under a certain amount, anything under a certain weight, I suppose.
Golly,
not the big ones like Tony was talking about. No,
yeah, the 40 pounders, the nutria. I've seen pictures on the internet of people pulling pictures of nutria and saying, "Oh my goodness, look at this huge rat." Because they do. They kind of look like rats.
They do.
But they have webbed feet. They're totally different.
Big water rat. Yep.
Can you remember a time where you went out to a call, which was a routine call? It was ants or it was mice or something like that. You go out to a routine call and then find something that you weren't expecting to find, like, a giant anaconda or something.
No, nothing too crazy. I don't have any crazy stories on that one. I haven't ran into any snakes, fortunately.
Ooh, snakes are terrible.
Are snakes a concern in our area?
Not, again, it's more so people being phobic. We don't do any really treatments and stuff for them because, I mean, there are a lot of, like, little garter snakes around, but it's not one of those that's going to hurt. It's more so just people that are, like, spiders. They're freaked out about snakes.
Sure.
People, don't like spiders.
What kind of spiders?
Yeah, we didn't really, we kind of
glazed
over
spiders.
Yeah.
I want to know because I've talked to people who have swore up and down that they've seen black widows on their property.
Wolf spider.
Brown recluse, these deadly, deadly spiders. Yeah, is it common?
Not like brown recluse, definitely not a common one in our area. If people are moving from the south, they can definitely bring them in, but it's not something that's native to our area. You're not going to see them very often. I mean, I've never seen one in 28 years. Black widows, we definitely get them on occasion, but there's also some that's called a false widow. It looks similar, but a lot of people call because it's a shiny black spider and think it's a black widow. And,
yeah.
And again, I've only seen them a few times over all the years. Probably the most common one that we get that can bite is in people's homes is a yellow sack spider. I mean, it's just a tiny little spider, quarter to half inch wide with the legs all spread out. And you get those up along the ceiling lines a lot of times in your kitchen or living room areas. Very, very common. It's probably one of the more common ones that we deal with in and around homes that can be problematic. Not that it's going to hurt you. It's just an annoyance. Again, it can cause a little bit of a bite if it gets you. But usually spiders are not going to go after people. They bite in a reactionary. If they're, you're stepping on them or, pushing on them or something, that's usually when they're going to bite. They're not
sure.
They're not going to go after a person.
Gotcha.
I mean, I know that I have had, it was when I was young, so it's hard to say, but I have had, wake up in the morning and I got like six bites up my leg, starting at my ankle and, all the way up. And I don't know, somebody told me it was probably a spider just,
Or bed bugs.
Or
Let's take a second and talk about bed bugs.
That's the worst. This is the worst. I have the hardest time dealing with this, actually.
Are bed bugs super common?
Definitely, more common, probably 15, 16 years now we've been dealing with bed bugs. It's one of those where if you've never had them, when you do get them, people just get freaked out because it's a bug in the area that we're, we want to be the most secure, our bed.
Yeah. We're the most vulnerable right
Absolutely.
There.
Can you get rid of them easily? Is that an easy job?
It's not an easy job. Can you get rid of them? Yes. It definitely takes a few treatments. We usually do three treatments for those guys. But again, it goes back to just being very meticulous and getting into all the little cracks and crevices, even more so than any pest that we deal with. Bed bugs take that more meticulous treatment because you just have to be very detailed in all the areas that you're getting into.
Bed bugs are something people probably would never be able to handle themselves.
It's
successfully.
Absolutely. And it's amazing. Just talk about different crazy stories where people will call, "Oh, I've got bed bugs." And by the time, one of our inspectors gets out there, they've moved furniture out of the house and done all these crazy things and thrown stuff away. And then they actually show us the bug when we get out there and it's a carpet beetle because they think the carpet beetle larva looks very similar to what a bed bug does. And it's a completely different treatment and not nearly as invasive.
Gotcha. Well, let me ask you this. So with bed bugs, let's talk about some of the myths and some of the things that people probably don't know. Do they only reside in beds?
No, no. They'll get anywhere in a structure. You can get them in couches, chairs, anywhere. And you can get them by just going to somebody's house that has them, picking them up on your body or your clothing and stuff and bringing them home. But it's one of those things I tell people it's more about being unlucky than anything because you're most likely not going to get them, but there's always that chance.
There's a chance.
If you travel or go to a motel or hotel.
What's the sure sign to know that you have them or don't?
Usually it's the bites. Most people react to the bites, but there are some that don't react to the bites, and those are where we get some severe infestations because they just don't know they're there. But usually you're going to start to see bugs or you're going to get those itches and stuff, and that's going to be that telltale sign where you get little red dots and things from the bites.
How big are bed bugs? Like, what is the actual size of them?
So the adults are going to be roughly a quarter of an inch in size, but the first stages and the eggs are, I mean, you almost can't see them unless you're really looking for them. I mean, they're tiny, 32nd of an inch. I mean, very, very tiny.
Wow. I didn't know they were that small. And I didn't know adults were that big. Quarter inch.
I feel like everything that I've seen and heard about them was always in large quantities and never, you know, in small quantities.
Right.
So just seeing one or two is less common, I feel like, I've heard, than finding them, you know, all packed into the corner of some piece of furniture or something.
Correct.
Well, those little red spots, why don't you explain what those are?
Yeah, the little, like if you're rolling over at night and you smash a, you know, bed bug, you'll get those little blood spots on your sheets and things like that. Or the droppings from a bed bug. You'll get almost like a little star that develops in the material, the fibers and stuff, because the dropping adheres to those fibers and you get those little stars, kind of a blood star from the droppings.
Gross.
That is absolutely the grossest thing ever.
If I had bed bugs in my bed, I would probably just burn it.
If I had bed bugs in my house, I would burn my whole house.
Oh, that's happened before.
That's the grossest thing ever.
People doing that?
Oh, yeah. People just try everything, or they'll put too many bug bombs off in their house, and you know, there's pilot lights, and their houses. There's all kinds of crazy stories like that.
So, yikes. Well, I guess the takeaway here is, Call the killers.
Absolutely.
Call the Killers Pest Control or go to the website, thekillers.net.
Absolutely.
And you will just simply come out and handle the problem.
Last thing, got about 20 seconds. Where are your guys and gals located? Where are your service areas?
We have three offices, the Portland metro area, our office is in Southwest Portland. We have an office in Salem, down in Southeast Salem. And then we have an office over in Lincoln County in Newport.
Very nice.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt, so much for being with us. This has been another episode of Your Weekend Warriors right here
on the Weekend Warriors Radio Network.
Have a great week.